I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Right now, Haiti has no elected leaders in power. The country's last president, Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated more than 2 years ago. There was no election to replace him. And this week, Haiti's appointed prime minister, Ariel Henry, said that he will be stepping down.
Haiti besoin la paix. Haiti besoin stabilité. Haiti besoin un développement durable. Haiti besoin rebâtir institutions démocratiques libres.
In his speech on Monday, Henry said, Haiti wants peace. Haiti needs stability. Haiti needs sustainable development. Haiti needs to rebuild democratic institutions. His departure comes at a particularly dire time in Haiti. The country has been facing horrific gang violence, a cholera outbreak, and record levels of hunger. We're going to talk in more detail about the circumstances there. And just a warning, some of that will be difficult to hear, including descriptions of sexual violence and human remains. Last week, after violence escalated again, the United States and other Caribbean countries, known as CARICOM, pushed for an expedited transfer of power in Haiti. The proposal that they announced would create a transitional presidential council to address Haiti's immediate security issues and to create a pathway to fair and free elections.
Haitian people do think that the Haitian problem today is not an Ariel Henry problem. He is part, according to, you know, experts, of the problem. But what people are waiting for is, you know, concrete steps to address the gang issue, concrete steps to address the humanitarian issue, and concrete steps to, you know, elect new people in Haiti.
Widlore Marincourt is a Haitian journalist, the editor-in-chief of Aibo Post, and a contributor to The Washington Post.
The last election was 8 years ago. And, you know, people need to have a say in the democratic process. People need to have a say in the future of their country. And, you know, these are questions that they are going to still have, you know, whether you keep Ariel Henry in power or you have a, you know, presidential council.
Widlore says that while Haitians have questions about what a new government would look like in the future, people are facing very real hunger and safety threats right now.
Haiti was already almost totally under the gangs, especially Port-au-Prince, where reportedly the gangs have 80%, of the territory. The country virtually is closed to the outside world. We are talking about the place where the vast majority of things consumed comes from foreign countries. They come in boats, they come, you know, in planes, and the airport is closed. The main port where containers come in the country, especially in Port-au-Prince, CPS, Caribbean Port Services, was attacked. So in the country right now, but especially in Port-au-Prince, we are seeing already signs of shortages of food, shortages of gas. People are running left and right trying to find clean water. And you can see also a level of desperation and concern that I did not see before.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers. It's Thursday, March 14th. Today, Widlore explains what has unfolded in Haiti in the last few weeks and the long-term challenges that any new administration will be up against. So it's been more than 2 years since President Jovenel Moïse was assassinated and killed by gunmen in his home just outside of Port-au-Prince. I think that's the moment that a lot of people will remember. And in the aftermath of that, there was this power vacuum of who would then be in charge of the country. Can you talk about how the aftermath of Moïse's assassination led to Henri being in control of the country and led to this moment?
Well, it's a very significant moment because right after the assassination of Jovenel Moïse in the intimacy of his bedroom, the 7th of July, 2021, Ariel Henry became prime minister with the backing of the international community. Quickly, his name emerged in the assassination of the president, but despite multiple protests, despite the fact that internally politicians, you know, were trying to replace him in the government, despite the fact that for many times he promised elections and security, he promised the last time that, you know, on the 7th of February this year, he would give back power to elected officials, but he failed to keep these promises, and the country under his leadership became in a much more difficult place, in one of the most severe examples of the failure under his administration is when, you know, the gang leaders last week attacked the main prison of Haiti, and they released thousands of criminals in the streets. Two prisons actually were opened by the gangs, and we are talking about some of the worst criminals who killed and raped with impunity for years that police officers tried to put in prison, sometimes with the cost of their life. And these gangs are actually out there in the streets, making the country in a much more precarious situation. So it is extremely significant that it's in this context the U.S. And CARICOM leaders change course and openly call for Ariel Henry to resign.
And so you're saying that because many people in Haiti believe that Henri had some role in the assassination of the former president, that there was a sense that he wasn't the right leader for Haiti. But Ariel Henri still had the backing of the U.S. and lots of international leaders. So what was the gap between what the international community saw and why Haitians were so frustrated by having Henri lead the country at this critical moment?
Yes, I mean, there is many things going on in Haiti at this particular moment in its history. The first thing is the outside world is really focused on many crises unfolding far away from Haiti's borders. I'm thinking
Ukraine, Gaza.
And all these crises makes it extremely difficult for people to understand the amount of suffering that Haitian people are enduring on a day-by-day basis. Close to where I'm speaking to you, we have a slum called Carrefour-Feuille. This slum was attacked several times in the past years, and including in the first month of 2024 by heavily armed gangs who, when they come to a neighborhood, that means total destruction. That means, you know, they are burning houses with people inside of them. That means they are raping children. They are raping young girls. They are raping men and women. We have a level of violence in this country that, frankly, I've never seen in my entire life, and I'm 32 years old. We have, when people say 80% of the Haitian capital is controlled by gangs, people do not understand what that means. That means not just you have a couple of neighborhoods where almost every aspect of social life is controlled by gangs, but we also have thousands and thousands of people, sometimes doctors, architects, you know, the blood of this country, living, fleeing to save their lives and go to the U.S. and go to the U.S. border. You have entrepreneurs having to leave because their businesses were ransacked by bandits. You have, you know, so many schools and institutions having to close or having to take decisions to kind of reduce staff because of the dire situation. And it is in this context that people were asking, begging the international community to stop, you know, supporting a government that they consider to be not just illegitimate because Ariel Henry was not elected, but because this government failed for more than 2 years to bring an end to the suffering.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been seeing the headlines that have been rolling in, as you say, over the past 2 years about increasing gang violence and hunger, cholera, you know, coming back to Haiti and being a significant problem. So now that Henri is stepping down and there's this sense that that he's doing that in order to allow this transitional council to come in and get established, like, what is that? What is this next entity that is going to be taking over control, or at least control in name, of Haiti going forward?
What is known so far is that several key stakeholders in Haitian politics and civil society agreed with CARICOM.
And CARICOM meaning the Caribbean community, like the group of Caribbean nations that are trying to kind of help shepherd Haiti through this, right?
Yes, several of the Caribbean community leaders and the U.S., they agreed on what they called a presidential council. This council would be composed of 7 members that have voting power and 2 observers. And this new structure would be put in place and appoint a prime minister that would have a cabinet of different ministers. And the goal would be to, you know, bring stability to the country so we can have elections.
And is there a timeline for that? Like how quickly this government would get set up versus how quickly they would actually be able to then establish elections to have an actual elected president come in?
Many things have to be determined. We don't know yet when this new presidential council will be put in place, installed in Haiti, and when a new prime minister will be selected. However, we do know that Ariel Henry and his government will step down when this new structure is in place.
But as you're describing this, it's hard to imagine how much, at least in the short term, this kind of transitional government could make a difference when we're hearing so much about how gangs are, in fact, in control of most of the country and that they're the ones with the power right now. I had been hearing headlines over the past few weeks and months about this idea of trying to deal with the gang situation by sending in some kind of multinational force from security forces or militaries abroad to come into Haiti and try to get things under control. Specifically, Kenya seems like it has some interest in sending some number of military to Haiti as a kind of stopgap measure for bringing some calm. So, like, what's going on with that? And is it more difficult to kind of come up with some kind of plan when there's no real government in place right now?
Well, Kenya announced that they want a government to be able to collaborate with if they are to lead that force. So effectively, Kenya is putting on hold the idea to deploy its police officers in Haiti. So we have to wait and see how the political process plays out.
And how do Haitians, at least, or Haitians that you've spoken with, how do they feel about that prospect of having another country's security forces come in to kind of take control?
Well, I could actually give you a twofold answer. The first one is about the political process being played out today in Haiti. People feel uneasy, I believe, that major decisions regarding the life of Haiti, regarding the political future of Haiti, seems to be being discussed outside of the country. People feel uneasy with the idea that, you know, foreign leaders, including the U.S., seems to have lots of sway and probably more power than the collective Haitians when it comes to who is going to be governing the country. So that I think is one thing to take into account. The second thing is, people are asking, how is this presidential council going to work? On a normal day, you have hundreds of Haitian politicians with very different ideas with regard to what Haiti is and how this country should be run. How are you going to put all these people on a council and make sure that this council is not ineffective? We also have a brutal history of foreign interventions in Haiti that makes people very uncomfortable with the idea that foreigners would come to Haiti and take over and support maybe, but probably have the lead on operations on the soil. Activists and experts I talked to, but also regular Haitians, are telling me it would be better probably to invest all this money in the Haitian National Police, to recreate the National Police maybe, to make sure that, you know, what we are bringing is not just a band-aid to a very difficult situation, you know, one would imagine, but a sustainable solution to the Haitian security problem.
After the break, the plan to prevent powerful gang leaders from running the country. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
I want to talk more about the gangs because there's one name that has been sticking out, an individual named Jimmy Cherizier, who is a very prominent gang leader who I understand is nicknamed Barbecue, which is pretty ominous. Can you tell me about him How he ended up having so much control over the situation in Haiti, and particularly in Port-au-Prince, and why he has become an important figure in all this.
Okay. How much time you have? Jimmy Cherizé Barbecue was a police officer. He rose to prominence in 2018, doing a very brutal and widely reported massacre in a slum of Haiti called La Saline. And it is around this moment that he left the Haitian National Police to become what we know today as Barbecue, the biggest gang leader in Haiti. In the past several years, he established the G9, which is a coalition of the biggest gangs in Haiti. Virtually every aspect of the collective life is under the purview of his gang. And last year, he announced a new coalition of gang called Vivensam. It's a little bit Orwellian, because in Creole that means living together, or let's live together. And it's a band of very vicious gangs spread all over the territory of Haiti. They went silent for a couple of months, but he re-announced the Vivensam coalition recently, and it's around that time the attacks against the state institutions started.
And so when it comes to the plans for this transitional council, how is this council going to prevent gangs and gang leaders from holding control in the future?
The gang leaders are trying to be part of the political process. We have Jimmy Cherizé, who said in a press conference that it is himself and the Haitian people that should pick who should lead the country moving forward. And you also have an ally of Jimmy Cherizé, a former police officer, who was in prison in the U.S. His name is Guy Philippe, who talked about amnesty for the gang leaders. But all these ideas make, you know, key people in this process extremely uneasy, because the gang problem of Haiti is not just a criminality issue. It's also a justice issue. And it is certain that any talked about amnesty would be rejected by a lot of people in the country. And while this political process is being played out, there are guardrails that are being put in place to make sure that, you know, gang leaders do not become members of the presidential council. To be part of this process, for instance, you have to not be someone who was previously convicted or indicted for any crime. And these are the type of guardrails that the international community and the stakeholders in Haiti are putting in place to make sure that the gangs are not part of the political process of this transition.
But Laura, I'm curious what it has been like for you to report on all of this. As you describe the security situation there, I can imagine that it must be very difficult to move around the capital, to be able to talk to people, to find people who are willing to talk to you openly, especially about what's going on both inside the government and inside these gangs. Tell me a little bit about how your work has changed and become more complicated as the situation has escalated.
Well, I live in a place close to the center of the city. A couple of days ago, it was probably 6 or 7 at night, I could hear extremely powerful gunshots. And my neighbors and I, we were certain that the gangs would come and invade the place. And I was ready to run for my life, because I thought, you know, that could be it. You know, all over Port-au-Prince today, you have barriers and gates and people using cars and walls and all sorts of things to barricade themselves and barricade their neighborhood from outside actors. There is a lot of distrust. And even if you show your badge as a, you know, journalist, there is no certainty that they are going to let you pass because you might be a member of a gang. So it's extremely difficult to move around and work effectively. But at the same time, I mean, the streets are not just hostile. These are places that are extremely difficult to navigate, you know. I was going to work the day before yesterday. I saw at least two cadavers, you know, in the streets.
Sorry, you said cadavers? Like deceased bodies?
Cadavers, yes. I spoke to people for my reporting, and more I'm hearing because, you know, virtually all major institutions are not working anymore. People have to take things into their own hands. And when there are dead bodies close to their houses, they have to burn them. It's extremely difficult.
I can't imagine what it must be like to come out of your house and see a scene like that, see bodies in the streets of people who have been victims in all of this. I think that for a lot of, I guess, Americans or for people who are hearing about the situation in Haiti from abroad, it sounds so relentlessly bleak and almost a little hopeless. And I think that's a pretty dangerous place to be, right? Because there has to be hope that some of this is going to get better at some point. I'm curious for you, in all of your reporting on this, have you seen any kind of reason for either optimism or at least a little bit of hope that some of these circumstances might improve at some point or that there is a chance that things are going to come back from this?
I was speaking to one of my colleagues at the Ibu Post the other day. He's probably 24. And he said, you know what? Hope is extremely expensive in Haiti.
What do you mean by that?
He means that hope comes with the cost, and the cost is probably your own sanity. The cost is to persist on the idea that a collective future exists despite, you know, everything you see, despite the inhumanity of the gangs, despite, you know, the sensation that many Haitians feel today, that they have little power when it comes to decide what the future is. I do believe, though, you know, hope is on the horizon. When I see, you know, despite all the dire circumstances, the other day I went in the streets to report for the Post, and the markets, I could see people, you know, coming and selling things. I see neighbors who try to help and share the little that they have. I see doctors every day, despite the risk of being shot, going to the hospitals and taking care of people. And as long as we have Haitians taking care of other Haitians, as long as we have professionals here who, you know, don't fall into hopelessness, I think this country will live on and will have a future.
With Laura, thank you so much for sharing all of this reporting. I so appreciate it.
Thank you.
Widlor Marincor is the editor-in-chief of Aibo Post, and he contributes reporting to the Post. In the days since the Transitional Council was first announced, several Haitian leaders have criticized the plan. The former rebel leader, Guy Philippe, said on Wednesday that Haitians should decide who governs their country, and that, quote, the decision of CARICOM is not our decision. Before we go, here are a few other stories that we're following. First, on Thursday morning, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called on Israel to make, quote, significant course corrections, end quote, in Gaza, and to hold new elections. His speech is the latest sign of frustration with the strategy of President Benjamin Netanyahu and his right-wing cabinet. Schumer is the highest-ranking Jewish elected U.S. official. He said that he understands the fears some Israelis have that a Palestinian state could make them more vulnerable to future attacks. But he doesn't agree. He condemned Netanyahu's rejection of a two-state solution.
If Israel were to not only maintain the status quo, but to go beyond that and tighten its control over Gaza and the West Bank, as some in the current Netanyahu administration have suggested, in effect creating a de facto single state, then what reasonable expectation can we have that Hamas and their allies will lay down their arms? It would mean constant war. On top of that, Israel moving closer to a single state entirely under its control would further rupture its relationship with the rest of the world, including the United States.
Schumer didn't set a timeline for when he thinks elections should take place, but he said that Israel, quote, cannot survive if it becomes a pariah. And on a more lighthearted note, here's one other story that I've been following. New research came out this week that helps explain why we go through menopause. I had never really thought about this before, but from an evolutionary perspective, menopause makes no sense. Like, if the goal is to pass on your genes, why would you stop reproducing decades before the end of your life? It turns out that very few species do go through menopause. It's pretty much just humans and also whales. Researchers found that whales that go through menopause, like orcas and belugas and narwhals, they live way longer than the whales that don't. They say the reason for this is so that whale grandmothers can help their offspring and help their offspring's offspring. Scientists have actually observed killer whales doing this. Like, in their family groups, the older female whales help take care of the babies and lead the group with important wisdom about where to find food, especially when it's scarce. All of this supports the, quote, grandmother hypothesis. This theory that basically says that grandmas are so important that it makes evolutionary sense for older females to stop reproducing and to be there to help their offspring. So that is just one more peer-reviewed reason to know that grandmas are awesome. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Ariel Plotnick and Renny Svernovsky. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Lucy Perkins. Also, thank you to Matt Brown. If you are looking for the latest updates on the big news of the day, please check out our morning news briefing, The 7. We bring you through the 7 stories that you need to know about every weekday morning by 7 a.m. You can listen to it wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.